This is the Beer of the Day podcast.
I can honestly say I never had a beer in my life, okay? It's one of my only good traits. I don't drink. Whenever they're looking for something good, I say, I never had a glass of alcohol. I've never had alcohol. I've just, you know, for whatever reason. Can you imagine if I had? What a mess I'd be.
From Beer of the Day World Headquarters in Elk Grove, California. This is the Beer of the Day podcast. Tonight we celebrate St. Patrick's Day with a segment with a couple of traditional St. Patrick's Day beers, Irish stouts, and we will compare them to each other. We've also got some St. Patrick's Day facts for you. Then on the second half, we'll transition to kind of a more traditional segment with a champagne beer, a Belgian dark strong, and a sour beer. I'm Dallas Helliker. Joining me tonight from Pasadena, Jeff Miller, and from Fair Oaks, Britton and Joel Miner. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Welcome in.
Good evening.
How's everyone doing tonight?
Doing well.
I'll be better after a couple beers.
I've only had one beer, so I'm thirsty.
I've had zero. But before we get into the first beer, let's talk about our recent beer experiences. It's been a few weeks or since our last show, and it's almost a month since we recorded a show. So I think we've had a little bit of time to try some beers. Joel, what did you have recently?
Well, I wouldn't say it was recent. It was about a month ago. It's been a while since we've done a podcast, but... it's funny. I was driving by Russian River for work, and I was like, oh, man, I remember Jeff saying that I should go try Shadow of the Doubt. There's a porter, right?
Yeah, an Imperial Porter.
I was like, man, I'm going to stop by and grab it. I was like, that's a great idea. So I drive by, park my car, and I'm like, oh, no. It's Pliny the Younger release. And I just sit there, and it's like drizzling rain. And I'm like, are you serious? All I want to do is just go grab a beer. I don't even want Pliny the Younger. I just don't want to stand in line to sit there and get a spot at the bar. So anyways, I go to the line and I ask the guy, I'm like, hey, but how long is this going to be? And he's like, it's going to be probably, you know, 30, 40 minutes. And all the locals are like, oh, this is the shortest line it's been all week. I was like, all right, I'm just going to sit in line. So I sit in line. It's like 20 minutes. I go to the bar and they give you a little bracelet. It's like a little bracelet. It has three things on it, and they rip them off for every Pliny the Younger you order. You're only allowed to have three at the Russian River. This is the traditional Russian River, the one in downtown Santa Rosa, the original location. So I sit down in the bar and I order Shadow of the Doubt, and the guy says, oh, I already brought you a Pliny the Younger. I was like, it's okay. No, I'll drink that first and then I'll order a Shadow of the Doubt. So he's like, well, I won't charge you for it. I was like, no. Go ahead and rip off one of the ones my bracelet. Charge me for it. I was probably going to have one anyways. And he was like, this guy. And so the guy next to me is like, dude, if you're not going to drink your Pliny's, like, I'll drink them for you. And anyways, the guy was super nice, but we ended up not doing that because they're really weird about sharing Pliny the Younger's there. But long story short, I sat next to one of the coolest guys ever, and I'm like, hey, what are you doing here? I was like, where are you from? He's like, oh, I'm from Illinois. I was like, oh, are you here for work? He's like, no, I'm here for this.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, oh, sweet. He's like, yeah, I'm a Cicerone. I'm a beer Cicerone. I was like, what? And so we got to talking. He owns a burger joint in Chicago right outside in Brookfield. And it's called Burger Antics. And the dude was like the most fascinating guy to talk to about beer because he specializes at his restaurant pairing beer with burgers and different types of food. So
tough life.
Yeah. The guy's name is Dan. One of the coolest guys I've ever sat next to at a bar. He probably had like 10 more drinks than I did. And I had one beer and I feel like he was more coherent than I was. This dude was a champ. But like I said, a really cool guy. You know, Dan, if you're listening out there from Burger Antics, Next time we're in Chicago, we'll stop by your place.
Definitely.
Dude, you're the only person that was disappointed to drive by and see it was Pliny the Younger Day.
Look, and I will say that beer is really good. You talk about a ton of hops that are just loaded into a beer that's like, I mean, everybody knows, like, Pliny the Younger is, it's a great beer. That's just not what I was in the mood for. Like, I was really hoping to get a porter and maybe a sour with a nice salad.
Because, Jeff, you had that shadow of a doubt before that last show we did.
Right. And it was, I'm not a big porter drinker in general, but that was the best porter I've probably ever had in my life. What'd you think of it, Joel?
Well, you can ask Britton, too. We both tried it. We've had it a couple of times now. Well, that's not true. Britton, tell what happened.
He brought a couple bottles back, and we had it. I thought it was really good. I liked it a lot. And kind of to Jeff's point, it's probably one of the better porters I've ever had. It was just, like, fantastic. Joel accidentally gave one of our bottles away, so we only had one.
She was mad about it.
I was.
All right. Well, I'll save my stories for the second half because I'm kind of getting thirsty here. So let's get into the very first beer we have. It's kind of a rare one, but perhaps you've heard of it. It's called Guinness.
This is the Guinness Extra Stout.
This is the draft stout.
Oh, my bad. You're right. Guinness draft stout. So make sure you guys follow the instructions on the can.
I measured out my 45 degree angle for pouring this.
But Jeffrey, did you wait a moment for the nitrogen to release?
I did.
I cracked mine. Excellent. And it's spilling out.
Two or three moments.
But I thought ahead and I brought a diaper to set it on. It's working like a charm.
It smells very, like, smooth and, like, it smells like a milkshake.
It's a lot lighter color than I realized. I mean, I've had a lot of Guinnesses in my life. And maybe it's just this draft version in the can. But it's more like chocolatey colored and not like a dark brown or black.
Ours is pretty dark black until you hold it up to the light, and then it is very, like, it's a lot lighter than I thought. I just, for some reason, I always thought that Guinness wouldn't let any light through. I've never actually held it up to the light. I got a good pour on it, though. So it did the, you know, like the milky looking thing where it's kind of a chestnut brown at first, and then it turned black with a really nice, like, thick head that's sticking around for a long time. That's like really fine bubbles, like cappuccino foam almost.
Yeah, it's very foamy, creamy head.
I mean, that's one thing that you can really appreciate about a Guinness is, like, they have got the pour and the head down. Like,
from a can.
Yeah.
That's what's impressive.
It's exactly what you want and the way it should be.
I can't really describe what it smells like, though. It's just kind of
No, there's a little bit of, like, hot chocolate smell to it.
You can, I mean, you can hear the CO2 cartridge rattling around in there.
Yeah, I mean, you get some maltiness. I mean, it's not an overwhelming aroma by any means, but you can smell the malts.
This tastes better than in a bottle. Out of bottle with dinner, and the can is way better.
So, Britton, there's like this wise tale, or what's it called? Yeah, it gives me a wise tale that if you drink stouts...
Wives.
not a wise tale, a wives tale. That stouts help produce milk in the old mammary glands.
They help bring your milk in, allegedly. So I got Guinness as one of my first beers after I had the baby, just because it's low ABV and allegedly would help with that. I don't know if it does or not, but it tasted good.
How's it working?
Her milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. It's all good.
But I agree. I think this is better than the Guinness Extra. I think it has a lot more body to it when you have the draft with the CO2 or the nitrogen. It just adds texture that I like.
It has a super creamy mouthfeel. I really like it. Even though it has, like, lively carbonation, The carbonation from the nitrogen is really good. I think it's super fine bubbles, but you can feel like that bite on your tongue, but it's still, even with that like lively carbonation, it has the creaminess to it that I would expect from a Guinness. That's what I like about it.
Yeah. For me, for a mouthfeel, it has the carbonation up front, but I like beers that have like long lasting carbonation feels. So I feel like this one, you get the upfront carbonation and then it goes really flat really quickly. And I've never really liked that about Guinness. I kind of wish it had more of the carbonation towards the end of it.
Yeah, you're right. It has a lot of the CO2 nitro carbonation, you know, at the top in the head, but the actual bubbles within the beer is very light. I just have to reiterate the creaminess of this mouthfeel. It's perfect. Like if they were trying to design a perfect pour, they've achieved it. Like this is exactly what they had in mind. It tastes very fresh. I know this beer travels a long way, and so a lot of times it ends up sitting on the shelf for a while. They probably move a lot of it this time of year with the St. Patty's Day, but boy, this really translates well into the glass.
I like it a lot. I think it's one of my people might make fun of me, but it's a go-to beer for me, I think, just because of, you know, it's a good stout. It's like we already talked about the creamy mouthfeel, but the roasty quality that it has, and it's malty. I feel like you can taste the barley that they use too. So it's kind of like a nice grain forward beer for me. I like that.
Well, and it's super drinkable. I mean, it's only 4.2%. But I can't tell you like how many people I've talked to over the years that are not huge, like, beer drinkers that are turned off by dark beer because they look at a Guinness and they're like, oh, that's got to be really heavy or something that they just based on the appearance, they're not willing to try it.
Yes.
But Guinness is actually like one of the, it's not, I wouldn't call it a light beer, but it is very easy to drink. It's a light body. It is the opposite of what I think a lot of people think that haven't had it before.
And it's it really is an Irish stout. Like stouts, you know, American beer, craft beer is all about the stout a lot. They have, and they're usually very heavy beers. Can't really drink them. Just your average person off the street isn't going to really appreciate it. This one, even though it's really, really dark, it's so drinkable that I think people would be surprised at how much they would enjoy this.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And I think that, I don't know if a lot of other people are like this. I would say stouts and porters are my number ones. But as we get and move into warmer weather, I tend to taper off on how much I drink those because of how heavy they are. And Guinness, I would drink year round. Like I could drink this in the summertime. It's light enough that I would be fine.
Yeah, good point.
All right. Well, we have to compare it with Murphy's Irish Stout. I'm going to, while they're opening the next beer, give you some fun facts about St. Patty's Day as it relates to beer. In 2019, 55% of Americans plan to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Seems a little low to me, but yeah. I guess that includes a lot of, the young crowd versus the old crowd. I'm starting to get old enough to where I probably won't celebrate it this year. 5.6 billion will be spent on St. Patrick's Day.
I believe that
$40 is the average amount St. Patrick partiers will spend.
I think that's low.
That seems low to me. 81% of celebrators plan to wear green. 19% plan to be pinched. 40 pounds of dye is used to turn the Chicago River green. And 5 hours is how long the green dye lasts.
I had to do the math on your 19% thing for a second. I was like, oh, 19%.
I made that one up, by the way.
Oh, 81, like, duh. Sorry.
And 1.3 million is the value of a leprechaun's pot of gold. Contains 1,000 one-ounce gold coins. Didn't know that.
Now, is that standard for a leprechaun's pot of gold? Is the 1,000 one-ounce coins?
Apparently, they're sticklers for accuracy and accounting.
Oh, all right.
Beer-related, St. Patrick's Day ranks third among the most popular drinking days. Anyone else want to weigh in on what it is?
Cinco de Mayo, at least in California.
No.
4th of July?
No.
And New Year's.
New Year's.
New Year's and Mardi Gras.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought of Mardi Gras, actually.
4.2, the average number of drinks consumed per person on St. Patrick's Day. It's a little low.
I have a friend who would over-index that by quite a bit.
32% of men admit to binge drinking on St. Patrick's Day.
The other 68% are liars.
Correct. 13 million... pints of Guinness will be consumed worldwide on St. Patrick's Day. 152.5% more beer is sold on St. Patrick's Day than usual. 819% more Guinness is consumed than usual. All right, well, after that, let's get on to the next beer.
Yeah, okay, I just want to say that this beer looks exactly the same in terms of the color, the head. I have the exact same glass. I poured each one, and I don't know that I can tell a difference.
I'm going to disagree with you on the head. Ours, and I don't know if it was just ours in the way I poured it or not, but the head is significantly different from Guinness. It's a lot lighter. It dissipated much quicker than the Guinness did, and it looks like it's a little bit more coarse bubbled than the Guinness.
And I'm not sure that Britain poured at a 45 degree angle. I think it was more like 44.6 this time.
Shoot. I messed it up.
Is that what the instructions say?
The instructions on the can again on the Murphy Stout say 40 degrees, 45 degree angle.
So I didn't know Murphy's was owned by Heineken.
Huh. I can't actually say that I've ever had this beer.
I don't remember it.
I've had Murphy's Red Ale. But I don't know that I've ever had the Murphy's Stout.
I've never had this beer.
And you mentioned that Murphy's is owned by Heineken. Guinness is owned by Diageo, a liquor brand that owns Johnny Walker, Smirnoff, Kettle One, Tanqueray, Captain Morgan, Crown Royal, Don Julio, and other Irish beers like Harp, Schmidix. So they have the market corner there on the Irish beers.
A diverse portfolio, too. This one smells different than Guinness by a long shot. Have you smelled it yet?
Yeah. Why do you say it smells different?
I don't think it has any of the chocolate notes that you get in the Guinness. I think you do get some of the milk chocolate in Guinness, like very light notes of that. You don't get any of it in this.
I get a lot more like roasted malts and a lot of coffee on this one. Whereas to me, like Guinness didn't really smell like anything. This one has a significant aroma.
Do you guys still have your Guinness or did you drink it all?
We drank it all.
Because it's weird to like now to go back and I'm smelling the Guinness. The Guinness smells really different after smelling the Murphy's in a kind of a weird way. Yeah, I agree. I think the aroma on Murphy's is much more like coffee flavored and less chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah, the coffee is the key. Like, it's sorry. The coffee is the key aspect here, because not only do you smell the coffee, but when you taste it, I just took a drink of it, there's a little bit of like acidic coffee flavor at the very, very end, which is very different from the Guinness. Guinness is light and smooth and just a little bit of malts, whereas this one has a little bit of bitter acidic at the end.
I think the flavor is very different from Guinness. I think there's sort of like a... You know, there's a similar creamy mouthfeel, not as much as the Guinness, but there's more like toffee and coffee flavors, maybe some like vanilla that I didn't get much of that at all in the Guinness.
Yeah, I agree. I think on the whole, it's much sweeter than Guinness. I like it. I'm pleasantly surprised by this beer, actually. It's all the flavor that I would want, but it's still like a very light mouthfeel.
Yeah, I agree with Jeff. It's a little bit more complex than Guinness, but I'm not sure if I was stuck on an island for the rest of my life, I would take Murphy's over Guinness. And maybe we'll do that later on, but should we do, like, which one would you rather have?
Yes, if you look at number 7 on the agenda, it says, which Irish stout do you choose to drink on St. Paddy's Day?
Okay, I'll wait.
I am a conscientious podcaster and have the agenda pulled up on my phone right now.
Well, lucky for me, I might have just transitioned us into number 7 because we were previously on 6.
Well, let's transition to 7 then. What do you guys say?
All right, so this is going to sound weird. I think it depends on how hot it is on St. Patty's Day. If it's cold, I think I'd rather have a Murphy's. And if it's hot, I think I'd rather have a Guinness. I think the reason why is because I feel like the Murphy's is more like, it's more thick in my mind. And it has more like flavor that reminds me of winter flavors. It's the toffee, the coffee. It's the more bitterness that I would rather have on a cold day.
I thought that didn't make sense at first, but now I agree with you. I think Guinness, like Brennan said earlier, is something you could sort of drink all year round. And Murphy's seems more like a winter stout. I actually like them both. I'm impressed with both of them. I would for sure buy either one again. Murphy's is a little bit sweeter. Actually, it's a lot sweeter. And I don't particularly like sweet stouts very much. I still enjoy it, but I think I would go with the Guinness.
I would go with the Guinness, and it's just purely based off the mouthfeel. I actually like the taste of the Murphy's a little bit better, but I actually think it's a little bit thin. And the Guinness is so creamy and has such a good mouthfeel with like the foamy head that I'm going to go with the Guinness.
What do you think, Dallas?
Well, I do not have the Murphy's. Was not able to get it here. So, but as a side note, I will say that while you guys were drinking that, I opened up a Guinness Extra Stout in a bottle, big bottle, and just wanted to mention the differences. It is less foamy, just looking at it in the bottle, but when I poured it into the glass, huge amount of head, but not more of a traditional head, somewhere in between the small little bubbles that we get with the nitro in the can and a traditional head. So it's like not as fine bubbles. So it's not as creamy. And then it's 5.6%, 1.5% more. And so there's a little more body to it. So it's definitely a different experience. If a little heavier, if you want to try the extra stout. But that being said, the Guinness Draft, I think it's kind of a newer release in the can, and I really think that really translates well into the glass. So if I had to pick between those two, I'll take the Guinness Draft Stout.
I think I'm going to, on Sunday for St. Patty's Day, I'm going to drink 3 more of each of these, and then I'm going to formulate my rating that I'm going to put on the website, Beer of the Day. So I would encourage others to do that too. Go on there and rate these beers, what you think, because we need a few more votes.
Sounds good. And with the first shit.
Do over.
And with the first half of the books here at Augusta, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, our players will make the turn and head to the back nine here at the Masters. At Beer of the Day. All right, normally at this point in time, I tell you to support us by going to Amazon.com through our website and doing your normal shopping. Normally, we get a percentage off of what you spend. But I guess Beer of the Day is such a close-knit group of people that Amazon has seen fit to deny us payment on any shopping that goes on because they think that we're all friends or something like that. We're all too close-knit. I'm not exactly sure what their reason is, but we haven't gotten paid by Amazon since October. So Jeff Bezos, son of a bitch, philanderer, and scammer. He's just scamming us out of money. And screw him
and what?
$1 billion ship he rode in on. Okay.
I don't know how we're going to get by. We made so much money from that.
We made tens of dollars. And now it's all gone. So you can't help us by shopping on Amazon. You can't help us financially at all. But what you can do is share the podcast with your friends and family. you probably know people that like to drink beer. You're probably not just drinking beer in a vacuum by yourself in a dark room. And if you are, we appreciate you listening. But yeah, share it with your friends. Get them to listen to the show. And we can expand the audience that way. You can also rate and review us on iTunes. That'll help us reach more of an audience also. So thanks for helping us. And screw Amazon.
24 hours in a day. 24 beers in a case. Coincidence? I think not. Now, back to the Beer of the Day podcast.
Welcome back to the show. Now we have our more traditional Beer of the Day segment. We're going to have three different beers. One from St. Louis, one from Bend, Oregon, and one from Cincinnati, Ohio. Joel's old stomping grounds. We're going to start off. And normally we do this in order of alcohol percentage. We kind of move up the ranks. Tonight we're going to do it in reverse order. We're going to start at 10%, move down to 9%, and then to 8%. Just the styles of beers, I thought, looking at them, I think a lighter bodied beer is probably going to be better first, because if we do it after a sour, it'd probably be hard to distinguish the flavors. So, first beer, Blancs de Blancs. It's called a Beer de Champagne. From Side Project Brewing, St. Louis, Missouri.
Now, have you guys been out here to this brewery?
Yeah, I've been a couple times. It's a cool place. They have two locations that are really close to each other. They're like a block apart. Very, very small place. I mean, I think it's growing in popularity. If you look at brewery rankings on various websites, they're very high up there now. But it was a sort of a hidden gem in St. Louis for many years. They do lots of barrel aged stuff, saisons, sours, wild ales. I mean, they do very high quality beers, and the brewery was a great experience. I've had a lot of beers there, so it's definitely one of my favorites.
If you live there and you tell your friends, hey, I'll meet you at Side Project, how often does one go to one location and the other guy ends up at the other location? And they're like, where are you? And then they have to walk a block to get to the other place.
Depends on what side of the town you're on.
Yeah. And I haven't figured out the difference between the two. One is called like the Side Project Cellar. And they
one's probably barrel aging. They probably keep all the sours and the wild yeast in one location so it doesn't infest the other location.
Yeah, that could be, and I'm not sure if they make beer at both of the places or only one, but they're just a little bit different. They have different beers, so when I'm there, I usually go to both because you want to try different beers. It's not like the same lineup of beers at both places.
All right, this one is a yellow color, bright yellow color. I wouldn't even say golden. And when you see a beer that says champagne in it, you think it's going to have a ton of bubbles. Mine, there's a couple of little champagne-like bubbles floating up, but very light in carbonation. I don't know if that just happens to be my bottle. Maybe it had a slow leak in it or something, yeah, but ours, maybe you guys can corroborate that.
Yeah, ours is the same. It almost looks like apple juice.
Yeah, we have zero head. As in
zero
none.
Head, yeah.
I actually think
there's a little bit of lacing on the glass, but it's like a thin film.
It's also,
it looks like apple juice with just the slightest bit of carbonation.
I love the aroma, though. I mean, it's a strong aroma. You stick your nose in that glass. Woo.
Yeah, it's like fruit funk.
Yes, it's like apples, sour apple, green apple, but also some Brett type of funk.
I smell like fermented grapes. Almost like a white wine type of aroma.
So the flavor on this is pretty stunning. It has a huge amount of flavor packed into a small little sip.
Yeah, it's really puckery, and it's very, to Dallas's point, I think it's super like concentrated white wine. The thing that's getting me is I'm very surprised by how carbonated it feels without having any bubbles. It like really bites on your tongue, but there's not really any carbonation. It's pretty strange.
It's quite sour, and so the sour overwhelms at first, and then you have to try to get into the essence of the beer underneath. And really what it is to me is white wine, like a Chardonnay, but distilled down so it's like twice or three times more potent than your average Chardonnay. Like maybe Chardonnay is just watered down version of this. But there's also some sourness, like green apple, maybe even some lime. Quite a bit sour also.
This might be the most sour beer that I've ever had in regards to how long the sour lasts. And it's not necessarily sweet, tangy sour. It's like bites you in the back of your throat sour. That's so unique. Like if someone said to me, oh, hey, this is a drink, it has medicinal qualities, I'd believe them, because the shit that it's doing to the back of my throat, I don't think I've ever had a beer do before. But with all that being said, it's probably one of the most interesting beers I've ever had.
I agree. It's making like the roof of my mouth as well as my tongue tingle. It's so sour and I like it. And I would almost say I'm a little bit confused by this beer because I would describe it as palate cleansing, but the sourness does last forever.
Yeah. Have you guys ever had like a lime that is like the most limey lime you've ever had? What it does to the back of your throat and your mouth, not necessarily the lime flavor, but the actual change of chemistry in your mouth. It almost has that feeling, but without the liminess.
It seems like it's so acidic that if you kept drinking it, it would like eat a hole in the roof of your mouth.
I think it's eating a hole in my stomach.
But the sourness also has a little bit of a sweetness too, and I like a honey-like sweetness, and I think that balances it out. And I just realized I think the main flavor that I get is actually like pear. A lot of the side project beers are like 4%, 5%, 6%, these lighter saisons, wild ales. When I saw that this was 10%, that got me interested because they don't make a lot of beers that are this high alcohol percentage.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned the ABV because I don't know if I would peg this beer at 10%. Because the sourness is so distracting that you don't notice the alcohol.
It could be 20%. We'd never know. Yeah, I just didn't realize it was going to be this sour. Like, I scheduled the beers so that we finished off with the sour beer of the night. Pocket Watch is going to be hard pressed to be more sour than this beer.
Yeah, I think Britt and I had this a few years back. It's not as sour.
All right, well,
the Pocket Watch.
Oh, no, we didn't have Pocket Watch. We had Slide Rule, which is a really odd beer.
You know what I'm getting more of now, like on the back end, is more like the oak and the barrel flavors too. I didn't really get that at first. It was all the sourness. But now after, you know, I mean, this is an extremely complex beer, and I think the profile changes a little bit, especially if this, you know, as it warms up, you get more like a buttery oak flavor like you get from some like Chardonnays.
It's intense though.
Incoming transmission.
You've got mail.
Let's get into a few comments this week. We featured a couple repeats recently. Everyone's been busy traveling and everything, but we did feature The Alchemist, Hattie Topper. And we originally did it back in the day when we had our Vermont trip.
A great beer.
Rex Mundy commented this time around, "Great beer. My cousin ships it to me from New Hampshire. Don't let the brewers see that you poured it into a glass." That's a good point. So on Beer of the Day, we pour it into a glass on every single picture. The Alchemist, there's such beer snobs and perfectionists, whatever. They say that their beer is so perfect that it's to be enjoyed straight from the can and poured it into some glass with, you know, well, disrupt the, whatever chemistry they have going on. So they don't want you to pour it into a glass. If you go to their tasting room, which they don't have, or they didn't at the time.
They do now.
They do now? Yeah. Well, I'm sure they probably open up a can and set it in front of you because they don't want to pour it.
Well, what's interesting about that, and I get it, but if you look at our photo that's on the website, it is an Alchemist branded glass that we got there. So they obviously provide glasses with their logo on it. What beer are you supposed to pour in there if they're providing glasses?
Yeah, that's a good point, and I thought about that also. But I hadn't thought about that before, so that's a good point from Rex on the website. On Instagram, we featured Benny and the Bretts from Smog City, and Jeff took a picture, put it up there, and Smog City responded to our post. Benny and the Bretts will soon be emptying our 21st barrel named Benny for this year's batch. Cheers. 21H barrel. I don't know what that means. 21st or 21 hour. But Jeff said, that's great. Looking forward to it. Really well done with volume one. And then Beer Hops and Barley said, couldn't help but drop a comment. Your picks are great.
Word.
And they are, Jeff. You're doing a heck of a job. Jeff says, thanks. We appreciate the support. So if you have any comments, you can leave them on our website on any page or on social media at Beer of the Day at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We also have a voicemail line. You can call and leave a voicemail, 844-311-BEER, 844-311-2337. And this year we have a voicemail from one of our fans from Cleveland. His name is Brandon Bell, and I'll play the voicemail.
Good morning. This is Brandon Bell calling with AT&T. This is a courtesy call and reminder. We will be coming out to the location in a couple of weeks to perform work on the phone line to get you guys a lower rate. Give us a call at 216-937-8877. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thanks, Brandon. We appreciate the support, and thank you for listening.
He sounds like a very pleasant fan.
All right, let's get into the next beer. We have, from Monkless Belgian Ales, Bend, Oregon, we have the Meet Your Maker Belgian Strong. It's got the cork and cage.
I've been working on opening it since the last segment.
You work out more.
Let me get down one more gulp of that last one.
Chug it.
Well, I poured mine. Mine opened pretty easily.
I'm going to pop mine open.
And I popped to it, too.
Yeah. While you guys are still trying to open it.
Struggling.
Have either of you opened
it? We've opened ours.
Oh, there we go.
I like the color. It's a dark reddish amber color. A huge head. I don't know if you guys got that, but sort of a monstrous, foamy, light tan colored head.
We got a kind of thin, well, it's like a maybe one finger just right around the edge of the glass. Really coarse bubbles, though.
Mine's like yours, Jeff. I poured 3/4 of a glass head, and then the bottom is a dark orange reddish color beer.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful looking beer.
I just looking at this head, It just is never going to fade away. You know, a lot of beers, you can tell the head is going to just dissipate. This does not look like a head that's going anywhere.
Look at ours.
Britton and Joel are holding their glass up with just a small, thin head. And I'm holding mine up, and it's the whole glass is head.
It's like 3 inches in
yours.
Dang,
I wonder if we poured too carefully. Well, it smells fantastic. I could just sit here and like smell that all day.
Yeah. What is it? Dark fruit?
Definitely.
Yeah, some fig for sure.
A little bit of
raisins.
Yeast. I love the aroma on Belgian style beers. They're very inviting.
Yeah, a little of that Belgian yeast, maybe a little banana or plantain type of aroma.
Well, because Belgian beers are the only ones where I really get like a yeast aroma.
Yeah, it's like bread that it's like been proofed but not put in the oven yet.
Wow.
Interesting beer on the flavor.
Yeah, the first taste that I got was soap.
I didn't get soap, but I got sugar. This is very sweet, and you know how all Belgian beers kind of taste the same? This does not taste like a Belgian beer to me. It's lacking those Belgian characteristics.
Well, I get a lot of fruit. The first thing I thought of was it's very fruit forward, like dark fruits, like raisin, plum.
Might even get some dates in there.
Yeah,
I'm getting, but I'm getting some tropical fruit too. Like I'm getting some like Northwest hop type of tropical fruit flavors.
I don't
get that. It's really bitey. Like really bitey and kind of rough. Sorry. It seems rough. Like it's not smooth drinking.
To me it's like we're describing different beers. Like mine's pretty smooth.
Yeah, so here's the only way I can describe it. Have you guys ever drank warm soda where when you put the warm soda in your mouth it instantly carbonates?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like in the
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So I'm getting like the instant carbonation when I put it in my mouth. It like instantly like bursts into something and it's like, it's hard to swallow because the mouthfeel is so carbonated that I can't figure it out.
It's like burning your tongue the whole time.
I think what it is for me, you just made me think of it with soda. It almost tastes like a rum and Coke or like a whiskey and Coke, like a Jack and Coke. It's got, you know how when you drink like whiskey, it has that warming feel to your body, like your chest warms up as you drink it. This kind of has mm-hmm. that. It's kind of a booziness, but it tastes like
I'd go with the rum and Coke for sure.
Because there's very much a sweetness to this, some like a chocolate or caramel sweetness with like the soda mouthfeel.
When I tasted the first sip, there was a familiarity to it, and I think that rum and Coke thing is what it is. Honestly, I think you nailed it.
The bottle says chocolate and coffee. I'm not sure if I get chocolate and coffee, but it does actually mention raisins and dates, which is funny because I don't pick up date a lot on a beer. Raisins, yeah, but not date. But yeah, I'm getting that now.
I think there's some earthiness to it also. Like, Dallas, you mentioned the hops. I get like some earthy hops and some floral hops. But it's still just very fruity to me.
It's fruity to me too.
These two beers we've had, you know, the Blanc de Blancs and this Meet Your Maker are some of the most interesting mouth like experiences because they're very different, but they're both insanely intense.
I actually like this.
I agree completely. I think they're the mouthfeels are unique, but also the flavor is unique. I mean, you're not going to find any two beers the same as the two beers we just had.
I agree. This Meet Your Maker is a little bit harder for me to get down than the Blanc de Blancs, surprisingly, even though the Blanc de Blancs is very sour. I would actually think that this Meet Your Maker had a higher ABV than the previous beer.
That I agree with. I
think it's a little bit rougher around the edges.
It's a little boozier, but because it's not, the sourness was so hard for me to get down for the Blanc de Blanc that this is a welcomed reprieve from that. So I think you could have given me just about any beer right now and I would have loved it.
This is 9%. It actually reminds me a little bit of some of the beers from the brewery in Placentia. Just the complexity and various flavors. But there is a booziness here. We drink a lot of beers where we say that the alcohol is like well hidden and whatnot, but this is one where it doesn't seem to be hidden at all.
No, and I was just trying to think back on if I could think of another beer that seemed more carbonated to me, and I can't. This one is really like it kind of dances all around your tongue and is really, it seems really carbonated.
You mentioned rough around the edges. Is there kind of like a leather or tobacco flavor? I mean I get that along with the fruit maltiness
on the finish. I think yes.
I just think there's a lot going on here. I enjoy this beer because I think it's high quality. It's not something I'm going to drink that often, but it's interesting. It is unique. It's complex. I mean there's a ton going on here, and I think people's perspectives will be different. Everybody's going to have a different take on this beer.
So yeah, I do think that there's something about this beer that I'm not enjoying, but I'm not giving it credit because I think, Jeff, you mentioned that it's very unique. It's very complex. Here's how I think I could make this beer probably one of the best beers I've had this year is if I poured the entire glass, put it in the refrigerator for 2 hours or like somewhere where all the carbonation could somehow escape because it's just so overly carbonated for me that I'm not sure I can handle it. But one of the things that we haven't talked about is I'm getting some ripe banana at the very end on this. I'm getting some ripe banana, and I really enjoy that.
Which would make it more traditional. Like lots of Belgian style beers have a banana flavor. But to me, this is not a traditional Belgian style beer for the most part.
No. And I don't know that it's actually carbonation itself that's making it do that, or if it's just kind of bitey, like the flavor itself. I don't know. It is an interesting and complex beer.
When you say bitey, do you mean like a chewy mouthfeel?
No, I mean like it's almost like pricking your tongue.
I agree that it's not traditional Belgian. I like the complexity. I do think it's a little boozy for 9%, but I like it a lot. I think very interesting beer. It's not bitey to me, and I think maybe the carbonation that they did not release in their pour might be ending up in the beer still. Like because Jeff and I poured ours so vigorously, maybe we released a bunch of carbonation and it's not as prevalent in the taste.
I'm going to try that. I'm going to do like a vigorous pour real quick and see if it changes
anything. I also wondered, since Joel and Brennan's was so difficult to open, could that have influenced the carbonation at all? Like maybe ours, not that something like leaked out necessarily, but because ours were pretty easy to open and theirs was so difficult, maybe something was trapped in there.
Or maybe the opposite. Maybe we had pressure in ours that made it easy to open and they had lost their carbonation, pressure, all that. And then that, and now their beer has changed because of that.
Yeah.
But Joel should put it in his refrigerator now and then wake up at 1 a.m. and drink it and see if it's better.
Wah!
Yeah, when you get up to feed the baby, have the rest of that.
Oh, he's sleeping through the night, but thanks. He sleeps. Luckily, we got him sleeping from, he sleeps from about 11 to 5.
Oh, I thought you meant Joel.
So.
Sorry. I was.
Oh, no. Yeah, the other baby.
So I mentioned that I had some trips coming up, and I wanted to talk about the beer scenes in Paris and Mexico, Cancun specifically. So in Paris, not a big beer city. Can you imagine? There is no breweries to speak of. There was a few somewhere, but not like you can't just go to them and have a beer. But in one restaurant out of the 15 that I went to, they had a French beer. It was from Brasserie Goutte d'Or, and it was kind of your typical German lager type of beer. In every restaurant, the beer that you order is Cronenberg 1664. It's like German, it's everywhere. And that's the beer I drank when I was there, and I did have that one Paris beer, but it was pretty reserved as far as the beer scene. No United States beers anywhere to be seen. Didn't see any anywhere. In London, I saw some like Green Flash and some different ones. In Germany, I saw some. You know, it was starting to come a little bit with Stone getting a footprint there, but in France, not a beer town, and so I was going to record, try and find a brewery to record a mini podcast, but didn't get the opportunity. Then in Cancun, when Jeff and I were at a beer festival in Southern California, we've seen some breweries from Tijuana and Northern Mexico that are kind of capitalizing on the California beer boom, and not the case in Cancun. They had a brewery on Isla de Mujeres, in which is off the coast there, the Isle of Women.
Yes.
But But the brewery didn't keep regular hours, and so I didn't want to take the ferry ride over there on a crapshoot. So didn't have any Mexican beer. So that's why we are missing the two mini shows I was planning to do, but we will do some more mini shows in the future from different breweries where we'll just kind of record a description of the brewery, a couple beers, and kind of give you a little sneak peek at a brewery somewhere. The one beer I wanted to mention that I had this week, I was in the mood for a double IPA, and I was in the grocery store looking at the beer aisle and trying to figure out what to buy. And I saw some of the prices of the beers, and I was blown away by how expensive some of them were. They had like a 4-pack for $23. And
Was that New Glory by any chance?
New Glory was one of the most expensive, but the most expensive was Moonraker. And I saw Jeff had posted Electric Lettuce as the beer of the day, and I was like, okay, well, I should do a Moonraker beer. I want to get a nice, solid double IPA. And I look at the price, and it's $23 for four. And you do the math, it's like $5.80 a beer, 16-ounce beer, which is, you know, you might pay more than that at a bar. So it's not outrageous as far as that goes, but if you're buying, you know, beers at a grocery store, you expect that it's going to be it's getting a little out of hand. So the beer itself was excellent. Exactly what I was looking for in one of those hazy double IPAs, with the juiciness and the citrus and then the play between the two, the sweet and sour of the fruit juice and the sour citrus. So beer is quite good. But it's hard to be good enough to justify that price. So we'll keep an eye on it, but it seems like to me they're pushing the envelope a little bit on the pricing, and maybe that is going to bite them when it comes to competing with big beer. So far, not. Apparently they're getting away with it, and they are, it's not a competition thing. They're kind of feeding on the competition with each other. Like, okay, this guy charges $23. I can charge $24. You know, it's like reverse competition where they're trying to outdo each other and maybe even create a sense of quality by charging so much. So
I would say that I think that the price is a reflection of the exclusivity of it. And a lot of these breweries, I would say, especially in Sacramento, I know, like New Glory and Moonraker do a lot of releases, and they are not hurting for customers, despite the prices. I think that the prices are a little bit high myself, but they always have lines, you know, of people waiting for these releases. So I don't know. Like, I think that maybe a lot of beer drinkers might disagree that it's too expensive. Maybe they don't. But I would say that the number of people that go to breweries like New Glory and Moonraker and wait in line for their can releases suggests that they're okay with the price.
Here's the thing is, last week I went to a local market, and I found Pliny the Elder for $6 and Shadow of a Doubt for $5.99. I'm sorry, for $5.50. Like, it's no brainer for me. I'd rather have Russian River Brewery beer than some of these Sacramento beers. I think it's just getting outrageous.
And that's the case everywhere. I see people down where Jeff lives in LA lining up for beers. And you have your couple of breweries here that have got this niche of people that follow them, and they're taking off of work to go get it, stand in line on a Wednesday to get the latest can release. Each can release, it's one and done. They release it, it's gone. The next week they come out with some other beer that's very similar. They change one or two ingredients and put a different cool looking can and then put it out, and people are standing in line for that, hoping to pay $6, $7 a beer.
It's really become the norm. It's like 20 or 22, 23, 24 bucks for a 4-pack, which is kind of outrageous. I mean, you used to be able to buy, I don't know what it costs now, but you could go get like a 6-pack of Miller Lite for $6. And maybe it's a little bit more now, maybe it's $7 or $8. But, you know, I think a lot of people that are not into craft beer will point to prices like that, you know, that it's just outrageous. And I get that, like, higher quality ingredients cost more, hops cost more than they used to. I mean, it takes more money to produce high quality craft beer, but yeah, some of these are getting expensive. I mean, I look at Sierra Nevada as a very reasonable price point for good craft beer. They're significantly cheaper than a lot of these, you know, smaller breweries.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I don't blame them for capitalizing on this. What is it called? It's a hype that they are able to capitalize on, that they have created either themselves or by copying the originators of the hype that did the same thing in different areas. And it seems like this new Northeast style popularity has spearheaded it. Like, a lot of these can releases are the Northeast juicy ones.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it much with, like, the traditional West Coast IPAs or any other style. You know, you might maybe get a porter or something here or there, but for the most part, it's people that like the Northeast IPAs, and it's working for now. So,
yep. I mean, one of my old adages for many things in life is that something is only worth what people are willing to pay for it, and people are willing to pay these prices right now. So, I mean, I think that it's high. I think that $24 for a 4-pack is slightly ridiculous, but a ton of other people are paying this. Yeah. So,
right.
Are we on the outskirts of this? Are we the outliers? Or
I think so. I'll pay money for anything that's good, right? You know, I'm not like a Scrooge or anything like that, but even I am starting to see these prices and have some doubts about it.
But if you went to, saying something. If you go to like a bar, you're going to pay $6 or $7 for a crappy beer. So if you pay $6 for a high quality, you know, large beer from a brewery, hey, you're saving money.
That's true.
Kind of.
Yeah, that's true. But when you're comparing it to the other beers there, and obviously you compare it to Miller Lite and you're getting a far superior product, but where do you draw the line in the sand? It's $24 now. When it's $26, $28, mm-hmm. $32, yeah. At a certain point, it's going to, they're going to jump the shark at some point if they haven't jumped it already.
This is one of the only discussions I can think of that we've had in the last, like, I don't know, 5 years, where AB InBev and these huge, like, beer companies are, like, the hero. Or maybe not the hero, but, like, you know, we're talking about them more positively than usual, where it's like, oh, yeah, their prices are...
I mean, I'm on the side of small craft breweries, independent breweries. I'm all for supporting that. And the reality is, if you look at, like, the economics of it, most small breweries don't make a profit for many years. And maybe it's because in the past they didn't charge enough. Maybe charging more helps them to achieve profitability sooner. You know, I don't know. But I do know that the cost of ingredients to make a high quality beer has gone up significantly over the last 10 years.
That's true. Yeah, it's just an interesting change in how things work. So I wanted to make mention of it because I'm looking at those shelves and they can keep going up. Every time I go in the grocery store, they seem to be a dollar more. So very interesting. All right, well, let's get back to the final beer of the night. We have from Cincinnati, Ohio.
The Natty.
The Natty, okay. From Urban Artifact. This is the Pocket Watch Sour, 8%. It comes in a can.
You guys ever heard of this place?
We've been there. It's awesome.
He knows that. He knows we've been there. We talk about it all the time. We like.
Yeah, I know. He just threw us a great segue, and now you're like,
"Whoa, is this a beer?"
Urban Artifacts, cool. It's in an old church, Whoa. So it's in this part of town, College Hill or something like that. I don't know. We went there. It's in an old church, so the brewery, like the tasting room, is on the bottom floor of the church, and it's a beautiful old, like it's old, And then the top half is like an events center. So when Joel and I were there, they were having a wedding reception, and all the groomsmen,
yeah, were coming down and getting their drinks on. It's an impressive place. Like when you go into it, it's very small and quaint. Like you feel like you're really connected with the place because it seems like.
No, honestly, you feel like you're there for youth group. But you go up to the counter and order beer. It's interesting.
So,
but these guys are known for doing like very unique sours.
Is this beer?
Very unique beers in general.
I have to ask,
it might be a unique sour. This is one of the most fascinating looking beers I've ever seen. It pours a rhubarb colored beer with a strawberry ice cream looking head.
But it doesn't let any light through.
It looks like grape juice.
Barely any.
It looks like fresh squeezed grape juice.
Or plum juice or something. Like it's dark purple. But then, or raspberry juice.
Like a purplish red color, yeah.
But the head is the most interesting. It is a pink milkshake colored head. And it was about an inch now, and it's disappointed down to just a, you know, a half a centimeter on the top of the glass.
It smells like strawberry milk. There's a creaminess to it that surprised me.
Strawberry milk, is that melted strawberry ice cream, or is that like when the cereal left the milk in the bowl?
Yeah. Both? Yeah. Yes.
Like, is there such a thing as strawberry milk? Oh, it's like strawberry syrup. Like instead of chocolate syrup, they have strawberry syrup.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's kind of what it smells like. And maybe a little raspberry too.
Raspberry. Yeah. I don't get the creaminess in the aroma. What I get is, this smells like the inside of a wine barrel that's had wine, you know, aging in the barrel. It smells like grape juice, like Welch's grape juice, or the inside of a wine barrel.
So I can't decide if this tastes like Welch's grape juice or if it's red wine. I think
it's not very sour.
Both? It's like if you mixed a lighter red wine. It's not spicy like a cab, but yeah, it's like a Merlot with Welch's grape juice.
It's very fruit forward.
Yeah, if someone said, hey, try this, close your eyes, try this. This is a new sangria that we've created.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, that's an interesting raspberry sangria.
Also, it tastes like barrel aging of new wine, like a futures tasting where they say, we're going to be aging this wine and you could buy it for 2 years from now, but you can taste it in its infancy now. And they take that big turkey baster and fill your glass up with a little bit. Tastes like that.
turkey baster.
The turkey baster in the bunghole.
That's it.
The wine thief. Yeah.
It has a certain... I wouldn't describe this beer as sour at all.
No.
I think it's kind of sweet and maybe a very slight tartness, but it tastes more like fresh fruit with wine.
There's tartness. I think Joel was spot on when you called it sangria. It's the combination of the wine and the fruit. If I didn't know any better, I would think this was a sangria.
The tartness is no more tart than a red wine is tart, or grape juice is tart. It's not like it's a pucker sourness that we had in that first beer. This is fascinating.
It kind of tastes like soda. Like it's like a sangria soda.
This night has been crazy.
All three of these beers are very unique. To me, this is like a fruit beer. It's tart, but it's not really sour. This is like, so looking at the can, it's made with grapes, black currants, and red plums. Oh, and vanilla beans. I get a little vanilla.
I can get the vanilla.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Without the carbonation, I wouldn't be able to identify this as a beer. But when I take a sip of it, the flavors do not say beer, but the carbonation does. What's so funny?
So we had sausages for dinner.
Joel keeps burping. And it smells fucking terrible.
I have so much carbonation in my body that I keep on burping.
I just like, keep smelling sausage. It's so gross.
It's like the Costco hot dog burp. It's so bad.
He like blew it at me through the mesh.
I am so carbonated in my chest right now. Okay, so we messed up on this beer. So we can talk about this. So one of the things that's instructions on the can, it says, make sure you turn it end over end before opening and serving.
Oh, so we're supposed to kind of shake it a little bit.
I'm doing a little mix now.
Interesting. I wonder if it's going to change at all based on... It's like a fruit juice.
It's just going to be more of the same.
But I enjoy this. Don't you guys think it's good?
I like it because it's very different. It's really different.
And what kind of beer advises that you shake it up before you serve it?
Well, not shake it, but turn it.
Because it's just fruit on the bottom. Mix.
It's carbonation, so you can't shake it, but they have to find a way to mix it up. And I've never seen that as a instruction on a beer before.
So here's one thing that I really enjoy about this beer. And I think it's one of the most underrated things I've ever seen in a beer. This beer has one of the best mouthfeels I've ever had in a beer. And I think it loses itself because of all the unique flavors in it. But if you just focus purely on the mouthfeel, it is insanely creamy.
I feel like you said that the last podcast too.
I feel like I can taste fruit. I feel like there's fruit soaking in this beer, like the sangria, where when I take a sip of it, I'm expecting a chunky piece of fruit to come with it.
Yeah, like you could almost get your daily caloric fiber from this beer because there's so much fruit flavor. It is really fruity.
Yeah, I guess it is sangria. I was going to say this is, you know, I like beer and I like carbonation, so this is one of the best red wines I've ever had. But there is a fruit quality to it that isn't completely wine, although this is very close to being wine that we're drinking. But there's enough fruit to where there has to be something else mixed in.
But this, if I just drank this, I would think it's like 3 or 4% alcohol. It's actually 8%. I don't detect any alcohol whatsoever in this beer.
I don't either. I think it's very well hidden.
It's a beer, but is there hops in it? Is there, what kind of grains is this brewed with? Like, is this really a beer or is this some type of something else?
To me, it's fermented fruit. I mean, they put a ton of fruit in here. I mean, it's, I don't know exactly what this means, but 1,000 pounds of grapes, 1,000 pounds of black currants, 1,000 pounds of red plums. Sounds like a ton of fruit. I don't know. There's got to be some hops, some grains, but maybe not.
Real fruit is heavy. Gently turn end over end before opening and serving.
So let's walk through this. So like, in order to be a beer, normally you have yeast, malts,
hops,
and hops,
and water,
and water. I mean, do we, like you said, we don't, we know, we obviously know there's yeast, but do we know if there are any malts or are there any
hops?
I think hops. There has to be just a small percentage of each. There's got to be some malts in here. Otherwise it's just juice.
The real fruit used in all Urban Artifact beer has been fermented out, creating a safe, stable, and delicious beer that will not re-ferment or explode under normal storage conditions.
So I know that Urban Artifact does a lot of experimental stuff. Like when we went there, that was pretty much every single beer was really experimental. I wonder if they're omitting certain things from the recipe, like hops. Like I can't taste any. You know, I don't taste any malt. It tastes like literally like a liquid that was fruit fermented and then carbonated.
Yeah.
But they call this a Midwest fruit tart. I don't think they're saying it's a beer.
That's a good point. But, you know, if you look at the can, they have this little scale where it's less sour to more sour. They have a little X really close to the more sour end. And this is not that sour.
No.
Nope.
I'd put it at 50-50, 50%. It's a several notches way above.
But they put the pH level. That's interesting. You don't see that on any other beer.
Now, is a pH low, pH high is more acidic or more basic?
No, I think low is more acidic.
So it's high, like midway between 0 and 7. So
I'm going to have to Google that.
I think you're right. A pocket watch was an important tool during the expansion of the 19th century American railroad network. Be on time. Find your pocket watch. Okay.
Okay, good. I was right.
Beautiful
low
beer.
Low pH is acidic.
All right. So beautiful beer, though. Slightly more acidic than average.
If this is a beer, the most beautiful red, purple color beer I've ever seen.
If we had a strange beer tonight, this would be it. All right. Anyone have any other final thoughts? Are you guys ready to pick our favorite beer of the show?
Go Bearcats.
All right, let's recap the beers we had. Who wants to do it?
I'll do it. Hold on, let me pull up the thing. Do you want me to do Guinness first, too?
Yeah.
Are we recapping all? Okay. We started out the night with the Guinness Draft Stout from Guinness Limited. Then we did the Murphy's Irish Stout from Murphy Brewery Ireland Limited, which is part of Heineken. Then we went to the Blancs de Blancs, the Bière de Champagne from Side Project Brewing in St. Louis, Missouri. The Meet Your Maker Belgian Dark Strong from Monkless Belgian Ales in Bend, Oregon. And we finished off the night with the Pocket Watch Sour from Urban Artifact in Cincinnati, Ohio.
All right, let me spin the wheel here. We'll see who goes first. Jeffrey.
My treat. Very interesting show. This, all these beers were unique and different. I'm going to go with the Blanc de Blancs as my beer of the day. I will say the beer I probably enjoyed the most was Pocket Watch, but I'm not convinced it's a beer, so I can't really pick it as the beer of the day. So I got to go with the Blanc de Blancs. Side Project, always high quality. I thought that was super complex. We got every flavor you could imagine from that, and it was just an intense sort of experiment in drinking that beer. So it was enjoyable. It was I appreciate the quality of that beer. So I think a pretty easy pick for me. I'm going to go with the Blanc de Blancs.
I am going to choose the Meet Your Maker. I enjoyed the beer, even though it was not a traditional Belgian beer. There was enough of complex fruit flavors, different things going on that was very enjoyable. There was a little bit more of an alcoholic kick to it, but it didn't faze me. And I don't know, maybe it had to do with the fact that it was such a transition from that extreme sour of the Blancs de Blancs that Jeff picked. But I'll go with the non-sour beer that we had tonight and go with Meet Your Maker. Britton.
My beer of the day is going to be the Blanc de Blancs. I was really like knocked over by that beer, and it was surprising in how sour it was, but I like sours, and it was really good. It was really complex, really sour. The Chardonnay qualities that it had to it were very interesting paired with the carbonation. So that is my pick, the Blanc de Blancs from Side Project.
So in the last probably like 2 minutes, I've just did a quick sample of all these beers. And for all the reasons that Jeff and Britton said, Blanc de Blancs is the winner in my mind. I was incredibly impressed by the mouthfeel and what it did to my tasting experience in regards to the carbonation, the way it felt in my mouth, what it did into my what it did into my throat.
It's getting more and more sexual.
But also, as it was coming into my brain, I was like, I'm just going to say it. I don't care. But also, I think that there is some really complex oak flavors that happen at the end. And I think if you're a person who's looking for a beer experience where you can sit down and have a beer and talk, or should I say an ale, where you can just sit and talk to your friends about it, like this is a beer that you should go and grab. Blanc de Blancs by Side Project. Very impressive. I'm so glad. I think Jeff is the one who said, hey, let's all pick this up and try it together. Thanks, Jeff. This is a great beer.
Good pick. And then one more time, let's just go around and pick our Irish stout. Jeff?
I said the Guinness. I've been drinking them both throughout the show. I kind of want to switch to the Murphy's, though. It has a pleasant sweetness that I enjoy this time of year. I think if we were doing this in the summertime, I'd probably pick Guinness, but it's still pretty cool out. It's almost St. Patrick's Day. I'm going to switch my pick and go with the Murphy's Irish Stout.
I'm going Guinness Draft.
I stand by my pick the first time. I'm going Guinness Draft as well, just based alone on the mouthfeel. I think that Murphy's might have a little bit more taste to it and taste more like a conventional stout, but Guinness Draft has a super creamy, super smooth mouthfeel that I just really like, so I'm going with Guinness.
So I'm going to be forced to choose here. It is going to be 70 degrees this weekend, so because of that, Guinness Draft is the winner.
It is hard to beat that perfect mouthfeel that they've engineered with that little pod that's in the can. It's pretty special. All right, we're going to close it out here with a song that was sent to me early in this podcast. It's called I Love Beer by Jeff Blaney. Hey! I hope everybody has a good St. Patrick's Day. Stay safe out there, or stay at home and drink your Guinness in the comfort of your own home like Jeff. We will see you next time for our 99th episode. Whoo, boy. I think next time it's going to be Jeff and I doing some coffee beers from Mad Tree in Cincinnati. And then
go Bearcats.
We're going to come back for our 100th episode. I'm still working on the plans for that, but it's going to be an event that you're not going to want to miss. So stay tuned for that. If you're on social media, follow us at Beer of the Day, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we want to hear your comments. Send us comments, feedback at beerofthedaycom, or leave them on any page on the website, and we will read them on our next show. Happy St. Patrick's Day. For Jeff Miller, Britton Miner, and Joel Miner, I'm Dallas Helliker. Thanks for listening to the Beer of the Day podcast.
I love beer. The way that it tastes, the way it makes me feel. So let's have a cheers. I love beer.